Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Lickin' on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update providing up-to-the-minute information on interest rates, loan programs, and hot industry news relating to the mortgage industry. Brought to you by Mortgage Banking Solutions. Whether you need a new warehouse line, hedging, or are interested in making the transition from broker to banker, Mortgage Banking Solutions' primary focus is to enable executives to take their business to the next level. To participate in today's program, our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now, here is your host of Lickin' on Lending, David Lickin.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the program. It's good to have you on the broadcast with us, getting an update of all that's going on, and certainly we have a lot going on. We have folks all the way from Daytona Beach, Florida, all the way up to Seattle, from Southern California, all the way up to Maine, dialed in and listening to us. We appreciate you all so much for listening in each week, and we just want to acknowledge you and say thank you to our listeners. What we do ask you to do is pass the word around to as many of you, those that you're doing business with or that are in the industry, that they too might be aware, so that we can increase our listenership and have the greatest impact. What's really encouraging, we're even getting some folks from inside the Beltway, some within HUD, some within Fannie and Freddie and Jenny Mae listening to the broadcast and getting the perspective of what's going on out here in Main Street. So we start out each week, we're going to start off the program at the top of the hour with Joe Farr bringing us an update on rates. Joe, thank you so much for being with us again. What's going on?
Hi, Dave. Today we're giving back a little of last week's gains, I guess. This morning we're down 4/32nds or an eighth of a point in prices, which means not much of a change in rates, but it is down a little bit. And it's kind of been acting today like it and stocks or mortgage-backed security prices and stocks are just going to choose to go in opposite directions. Early this morning, the stock market was up pretty big, and mortgage prices were down about 6/32nds. And then as the stock market gains gave way, mortgage-backed security prices came back. And then now we're back to the other direction. Stocks are up, and mortgage-backed security prices are down. So we saw that last week too. You know, the stock market pretty big hit. Last week was one of the worst weeks in a long time for the stock market, but it was a nice week for mortgage rates. So we're seeing a lot of the things that are said and announcements made are really being perceived as favorable or unfavorable to the stock market, and that's really pushing direct investors either in or out of other investment opportunities. Last week was really kind of a good example of that, Dave. The announcement in China that they were going to try to slow their growth, you know, they were over 8% GDP, what they announced was they were going to slow their lending, and as a result, you know, they're big buyers of lots of things that our companies sell. So the stock market didn't react favorably to that news, and mortgages were the beneficiary, or mortgage rates were the beneficiary of that. And then the announcement by President Obama to kind of restrict what the big banks can do also had a negative impact on the stock market, but mortgage rates were a beneficiary of that. So, yeah, we're really seeing that tie right now because the economic news is not all that out of what people are expecting.
Exactly. And I think also Bernanke's, the confirmation of him, you know, that was going back and forth like the markets were last week. Do you think that had a tie? I would assume it would.
Well, I do,
The perception?
I think that the stock market's negative reaction last week to news included the possibility that Bernanke would not be reconfirmed as recently as Friday. There was doubt, but fortunately, I say fortunately because I'd like to see him reconfirmed. Over the weekend, it appears as though more support has moved in his camp, and that this morning, the Wall Street Journal's articles are saying that he is now, likely to be confirmed,
yeah,
and so you know that is probably helping to kind of calm the markets.
Without question, we definitely want to see Bernanke stay in there. There's a lot of criticism going around and a lot of misdirected anger at what's happening, and so hopefully we'll see him confirm. Let's see here. So we kind of reviewed last week. Is there anything, an update on that before we move forward? Because we got an active, busy week this week.
Boy, we do. You know, last week I'd just say, you know, some of the economic announcements, it was nice to see PPI came out very, very benign. And you know, we've talked in the past about it's always a concern for long-term investors that inflation will kick up, but core PPI on an annualized basis was less than 1%, so right now it is not a factor.
That is encouraging. This week, they got a full big calendar.
Well, yeah, I mean, and a lot of it's non-economic. Some of it's political, some of it's, you know, the State of the Union address on Wednesday night. Who knows what's going to be discussed there that could impact more the markets, both the stock and mortgage markets. But you know, the Fed meeting, I guess, is the biggest one. The Fed's going to begin their meeting on Tuesday, and we can expect some form of announcement or their statement will be released at 2:15 on Wednesday, 2:15 Eastern time. I think we can all expect that there'll be no change in the Fed funds rate, but there will be statements made that will be interpreted as to either more or less likely that they will keep rates low for the current period of time, for the same period of time. I mean, they've said it should be an extended period of time, and we'll wait to see what they say about that. And then the other thing that's most directly related to the mortgage market is going to be if they change anything about their statement that they are ending the mortgage-backed security purchase program.
Yes.
They've said, and I think the general consensus is, that it will end their $1.25 trillion worth of purchases of mortgage-backed securities will end at the end of the first quarter, as previously stated. But if there's any hint in the statement on Wednesday, if there's any hint about you know, extending that, I guess it could be a market-moving event.
Absolutely, it could be. And most likely, if this economy continues to struggle in a recovery, I think we can anticipate them coming in, Joe. This is excellent. We appreciate you bringing this to us each week. Is there anything we've left out? I'm looking over your notes that you sent me before the program. Great job of covering all that's going on. Is there anything we've left out in this discussion before we go to a break?
From an economic announcement perspective, we have new home sales coming out on Wednesday. It's a busy week. Fourth quarter GDP will be announced on Friday. Durable orders on Thursday. And you know, every time the Treasury auctions off this week, they're auctioning $118 billion worth of shorter term, twos, fives, and sevens. And pay attention, I guess, more to the end, the sevens, because they're more directly or more closely associated with the mortgages, long-term mortgages. Those are auctioned on Thursday. So a very, very busy week.
We just got a quick tweet in here that someone sent me. It says, what is the new home sales anticipated number to be? And of course, they're asking you to go give your opinion what you think it's going to do. I know you won't do that, but what is the anticipated, stated outcome?
The consensus is for 370,000.
Okay,
and that's up slightly from the prior month. So,
yeah.
You know, most of the home, the existing home sales were less than expected. New home sales maybe even more heavily influenced by the expected end of the first time home buyer tax credit. So, 370 is the consensus.
Okay, so that's what we can look at, and we'll see what that comes in above and beyond it. Of all the economic items on the calendar, I know probably the Fed announcement and also the State of the Union is probably going to have market-moving consequences to us, but they usually are going to be more short-term. I think more of the longer-term is probably the new home sales and their durable goods, some of the more standard economic. Is that going to be the one that will, after all the emotional responses, are going to probably carry the day?
Well, it's a sign of economic activity, which has momentum going either higher, faster or slower.
Yeah.
And, we've gone through a couple cycles where that momentum seems to be picking up and the stock market improves and mortgage rates rise. And so, quite frankly, lately every estimate has, or every consensus has, seems to have been for more economic activity than we've seen. And so the momentum now seems to be on the slowing side than on the accelerating side.
Well, there's certainly going to be an active week, and we want to stay tuned to this, of what's going on. Again, for those of you that have access to MBS Quote Line, you're going to see it live as it happens. For those of you who don't, I encourage you to get the service. It's a wonderful service. We want you to stay tuned for the rest of the program. We got some exciting news, a lot going on in the legislative update, which is our next segment. And after that, we're going to be talking a lot about going on with the going-ons of HUD. I was actually quoted in the Wall Street Journal this last week. And so we're going to talk about what we can anticipate to see from the HUD, because there's certainly a lot of changes. Stay tuned. We'll be right back after this quick word.
Looking for that competitive edge? MBS Quoteline delivers live market coverage for originators. Get up-to-the-minute mortgage market news and analysis as events occur.
Get MBS prices as trades happen.
Straight to your computer, email, cell phone, or PDA. Know in advance when your investors will reprice. Make better lock-float decisions and increase your income. Be the expert your clients expect. And know what's moving interest rates right now, tomorrow, and beyond. MBS Quoteline, delivering live market coverage for originators. Learn more about MBS Quoteline today at MBSQuoteLine.com.
MBSQuoteLine.com.
646-716-4972. The Lickin' on Lending Show is back. Here is your host, David Lickin.
Welcome back to Lickin' on Lending. This is David Lickin. It's so good to have you with us each and every week as we bring you the information, whether you're listening to us live or dialed into the Blog Talk Radio's website and playing it after the fact. We just really appreciate you being here. Alice Alvey, every week you're in here digesting with blurry eyes, and I'm not sure, we're going to have to get your, we have to start paying for your vision test with all the reading we make you do. But bring us up to date on the legislative update, also known as the traffic report.
Right. Well, I think I'm going to start with the biggest traffic jam right now, and that one just seems to be, what is our regulation going to look like for Wall Street reform and consumer protection? So we've been telling you all about House Bill 4173, that's the Wall Street Reform and Consumer Protection Act. This one just moved to the Senate Banking Committee on the 20th. It's an indication they're going to start working on a companion bill, but as you start to get this building, you also have President Obama, who spent a lot of time last week talking about what the potential changes or proposals are going to be for how are the banks going to look in the future. So we've got the Banking Integrity Act. This is H.R. 4461. It was just introduced January 15th, and actually the details didn't come out till during last week. So this is all about kind of restoring what used to be prohibited, to prohibit certain affiliations, so prohibit depositories from engaging in insurance activities, and also kind of, you know, we've talked about, or you've heard in the press potentially the Volcker rule, Paul Volcker, so the president calling for restrictions on the size and scope of financial institutions to kind of rein in all the excess. So this would be prohibiting the banks then to, you know, kind of separating commercial from investment banking, and also prohibiting, you know, for example, that they would own hedge funds. So this is all kind of panning out. I've talked about these couple of bills together and President Obama's comments, because this is just at a stage where it's all in flux. All they know is they want to regulate the banks and change those aspects of it. So we're going to watch it as a whole item for you going forward. Then the other items on the list, we haven't heard anything yet about the two comment periods that have closed. So Regulation Z, Home Secure Credit, this is the one that would essentially look at changing that loan officers could not be compensated based on the term of the loan, lots of ARM disclosure changes. That one, we haven't heard anything about that. We'll watch for that coming up in the coming 60 days or so, I would say. We also have the lender approval requirements. You know, again, this was a proposed rule, comment period closed, and really just waiting to see what HUD is going to do as they assess the comments. In a previous show, we kind of talked about there was a real split in the comments, but more or less leaning towards we need something, we just don't want it the way that HUD wrote it. So we'll wait and see how the lender approval requirements come out. They really are trying to move forward with increasing the net worth. The part for lenders, the part that's up for discussion is, will HUD retain any oversight or provide any guidance about the elimination of the broker approval? So if something's going to happen, we're just not sure how far the broker approval lack of process will go. And so from a legislative standpoint, those are our newest things, the lender approval requirements. One last footnote on this is the SAFE Act. HUD also also has a proposed rule to have that the SAFE Act loan officer licensing would apply to banks as well. And I'll tell you, in my discussions with a couple of the national players over the last week, they're gearing up that, you know what, this looks like it might happen. We're going to battle it. We're not sure where we're going to get, but let's make sure we have some systems in place to make sure our loan officers are fully trained as well. So that's the legislative part that's passed. Now, FHA is another topic, which we're going to talk about in our Hot Topics section. I know we've got four things that have actually been approved by FHA, and then another laundry list of things pending. So, Dave, maybe should we save that for another section, the FHA part that's passed?
we'll go into that. We're getting a lot of feedback. Alice, so many people listen in on the program. For many aspects, all aspects, but this is one of those ones where they're going, man, we just sit down and take notes. We've actually had several people email me and say, would you slow her down?
Oh, that's right.
We got that one comment from Colorado. And, you know, what we're trying to do, folks, is try to keep this program moving so quickly, cover the things. We know that it's on the website. You can go back and listen to it. But then we slow down in the next segment. We're going to go into it in just a minute. We're going to slow it down and really start covering it on a more conversational basis. That's the format we try to have. We apologize for covering some of this quickly, but you do have it as an option to go back into the website and listen to those segments. So a lot going on. Stay tuned. We'll be right back with more on Lickin' on Lending.
Looking for a full-service mortgage training and consulting company to fit exactly what you need? Mortgage U is your ultimate education and information resource used by lenders to execute high-impact, high-quality training throughout the organization. Mortgage U instructors are mortgage professionals,
providing classroom and web-based delivery,
and has the most sought-after training manuals in the country. Mortgage U has a proven track record, performing customized training programs for hundreds and even thousands of employees, both live and online, on everything from application through loan delivery and insuring. Call Mortgage U today at 800-278-0200 or visit us online at mortgage-u.com. Welcome back to Lickin' on Lending. Our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now, here's David Lickin.
Welcome back. This is Dave Lickin. Good to have you Lickin' on the Lickin' on Lending program. A lot of people say, why'd you name it your name? You know what? It just worked. I don't know. I'm not ego about this. This is really Joe, Alice, and all of us together trying to provide information to you, the mortgage industry, about what's going on. So it just kind of worked. If anyone can suggest a better name, I'm happy to go to it. But anyway, it's working, and we'll go for it. But anyway, welcome back, Alice and Joe. Let's get into the more relaxed, the hot topic discussions. I get so worked up about some of the things going on, and there's some major changes going on at HUD. There have been a number of companies that have been getting letters saying you're no longer part of the HUD program or you're suspended from the program. I'll tell you, this compare ratio is one thing you cannot ignore. It's something that's out there. And I kind of feel sometimes you know how you're dealing. You're inside of the beltway with sometimes because you anticipate them doing one thing and they do another. So that's just my experience with the federal government. For you that are listening in from HUD, we welcome you. We just encourage you to be as straightforward about your communication as possible. I know you're trying to do that. I was quoted in an article in the Wall Street Journal this last week, as last Tuesday, right after our broadcast. The following morning, I was in there talking about the unintended consequences of what how HUD was adversely selected, actually, by a number of banks who refinanced all the loans that were in trouble or probably going to be heading into trouble. And so in many ways, HUD was adversely selected, and loans that could not be sold to the original investor were quickly reformatted into an FHA loan. And I think HUD I speak this to HUD's dilemma that they have, but not a criticism of HUD. Some would say they maybe needed to react faster, realizing this was going on. Some have suggested they didn't know what was going on. They let it go on. I personally don't think anyone at HUD that I've talked to would ever take on additional risk.
No, that was their role. Every member talking to, Meg Burns and some of the other key players over at FHA that are, always so willing to talk with those of us in the industry at the different conventions. And she came right out and said, this is FHA's place. So in the beginning of the economic downturn, when the subprime was first collapsing, they were a great home with their level of underwriting guidelines. But unfortunately, like anything, there's always the people that push that envelope too close to the edge of the table and took advantage of all the types of risks that FHA would allow and put them all on one loan, just layer them up and not know, put too much risk in a file. So now they're feeling it, and they have to make a change.
Yep, yeah, there's no question that there's, well, again, you start out trying to be that, and then when you find out by being that, you have been adversely selected, not just a little, but to the tune of billions and billions and billions of dollars. So the point, at one point in time, Joe, wasn't it that they were representing in some markets as much as 70% of all loan originations?
They were a huge part of the first-time home buyers. And,
yeah.
And a big part of the purchase in total. They've yo-yoed from being, you know, 25% of the total market to down to 2 when the subprime world was up and running, back to where they're now, you know, 40% of the total market. So it's maybe even more in some places. So
yeah, in some markets, it's been as high as 70.
Yeah, they have been a huge part of the the recovery of the housing market, which, as Alice said, that's their role. I mean, that's why they were created way back at the time we were coming out of the Great Depression. So they've done a lot. And Dave, when these loans on the balance sheets were refinanced into FHA loans, I'm assuming they met the HUD guidelines. And
I think they had a lot of manual underwriting going on, though. When it first started to transition, you had a lot of companies that said, hey, FHA loves manual underwriting. The refer bucket, so to speak, gives you a lot of room to still potentially do loans that the mortgage insurance companies won't take, for example. And we even trained to that because that was what FHA allowed at the time. But quickly you started to see lenders in that manual underwriting mode layer way too many risks on a file because, again, you've got underwriters who were used to the system making a decision and really, I don't think, had the right expertise to understand what they were laying. They were putting way too many layers of risks on files together.
And I don't think it was an intention to go out there and take on undue risk. I think there was a period of time when there was a lot of frustration within HUD that they only have 2% of the market share back when we were starting to do those experimental, crazy subprime products. And they're going, well, we can play. And then it's like, be careful what you wish for, because all of a sudden people are going, yeah, that's right, you will play. And, oh, by the way, all these are going away, so we're going to have you play a lot. And that's what brought on that dynamic, and that was what I was quoted in, basically the gist of my comments in the Wall that got quoted in the Wall Street Journal last week, was the fact that, you know, they were, you know, selected. Now, some would say adversely selected, cleverly selected. HUD got scammed. I mean, there's all kinds of characterizations you can put around it, but HUD was trying to just play their role. And to your point, Joe, that's what they were created for. And so it's that what you're created for can come back and bite you, and it's there's just a lot going on. But what is the fallout of that right now is the fact that many, many, many companies are getting letters and being told they can no longer participate in the program or they're suspended from the program. Alice, I want to talk basically about that. If you're one of the lenders out there that has going through that kind of thing, give us a couple pointers that we need to really bring out.
Well, the first thing is it's incredible to me how many companies couldn't even tell you what their compare ratio is. So what is your company's delinquency rate in comparison to not only national numbers but your local geographic areas? Look at underwriting regional centers. Look at origination centers. You really have to have somebody dedicated to checking neighborhood watch all the time. Identify what issues within process flow between origination and insuring are impacting your compare ratio. Know where you stand is rule number one. That way, if you do get notified, you know, you can say, well, I've been watching this, and here are the methods I've put in place. I've conducted additional training. I've put some system protections in place. We've put extra QA measures in place prior to closing to monitor this. Or, you know, what am I doing differently in my QC responses? Those are all things that have to be addressed early on. You don't want it that HUD's sending you a letter, and that's the first time you're going, oh, holy cow, I didn't even know I had a compare ratio.
Yeah, I can't tell you the number of people that need to go in there, and we're talking to people, and they go, what is a compare ratio? And I go, uh-oh. I mean, that's because they don't know. It's kind of like the guy, we just lost another friend, to a skin cancer, melanoma. And, you know, it's one of those things where you go, I mean, it looks, well, it's just a mole on my, it's a blemish on my skin. It's just a normal thing. I got it. Well, you don't realize some of those blemishes come back and be, you know, terminal, as it was for a friend of ours who just passed away here in our community. But the point of it is that, man, you got to get these things checked out. Do not assume that all those little blemishes, so to speak, are, in fact, just benign and nothing to worry about. That's just a sun mark. It's not. It may be terminal, and those are the things that people need to focus on. And for those of you that are listening to the program today, I'm going to encourage you to get out and check what your compare ratio is, understand it, and then know what you can do about it. We can help you. But, Alice, tell the folks where they can go again. On the website, read it out slowly, and I know folks will repeat it a couple times. But go on and listen to the program, and if you need to get again.
Well, I would say those of you who actually are listening to the program, who actually have your own login to FHA Connection, you can access. You should be able to access Neighborhood Watch through your FHA Connection, and but maybe you're locked down from seeing that information. But there is a public view. So, actually, I think the way the search, engines are these days, if you put in, FHA Neighborhood Watch Public View, I would bet it comes up pretty quickly. Actually, as a matter of fact, I'm going to see if I can pull it up right now to see how fast it comes up.
Yeah, I've got
when
I've
I
got
type
the,
it in. And,
I've got
it. It does. If you do that, if you just, whatever you like, Google, Bing, I don't care, put in FHA Neighborhood Watch Public View, and it will come up as one of your first hits. At least it does on mine, because that's my boring life. And I think they know that the search engines know what you like to look for. They're, oh, that's Alice here. Let's give her the top FHA hit.
It reminds me of that movie, My Big Fat Wedding, Greek Wedding. I love that movie. I've got the link here. If you can't get it that way, email me, and we'll make sure it gets sent out to you. But the bottom line of it is, find out what your compare ratio is, get to know what it means, and know what the consequences are. You are being, quote-unquote, compared to your peers in your market and then on a national level. Joe, we were talking about that earlier. Do you want to expound on this a little bit?
Well, it's at various levels that you need to check. I mean, it's at the branch, it's at the region, and it's at the company level. Because they can terminate your ability to make loans at a branch level, and there have been ways to sort of mask or to combine branches such that what was a branch operation that wasn't performing well matched up with a branch operation in the same region that was performing well. All of a sudden, it's okay. It's my understanding that some of those opportunities to manage your FHA risk are changing. Alice, were you were mentioning that earlier?
That the risks, the way that people are underwriting, is changing?
No, the ability to combine branches to make an underperforming branch okay for some. For a longer period of time?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, I'm probably one of the few people that looked at that and went, they're using a smaller font. And my eyes. I think they're trying to save paper.
That could be that you're getting older too, Alice.
That mortgage e-letter. Well, what's up with the small font? Okay, so, yes, they are going back into changing. It's mortgage e-letter 2010-03. And they're going to now change how they're going to look at, the performance. And they're saying, we won't just be going in now and terminating a loan origination agreement by a branch number. We now are clearly telling you we have authority to go in and shut down your whole DE, your DE authority. And it'll be up to them if they do it by field office, by area, by geographic area, depending on what's going on in the shop. So those companies who used to try and manage by having two branch IDs in a particular region, HUD's saying, we got a problem with that. If we tell you you're not doing well in this area, it doesn't mean you can just flip all your case numbers and have another branch process them. They want to try and put an end to that clearly if it's a problem area for your company.
Well, that is interesting. I want to keep going on this topic, but Alice, one of the things we just got emailed was, what can we do about it if our ratio is too high?
If your ratio is too high, you have to get into the analysis of why. And actually, I know next week Tony Gallegos from Mortgage U is going to be filling in on the show for me, and Tony's going to be talking about risk analysis. So there's two components. You have to look at operationally, what potentially do I have going on that's causing it to be high. We've had some companies that it's literally as simple as their insuring is way behind. They've closed good FHA loans, but they haven't gotten them insured fast. And that you know, FHA can only go by how many loans you have based on what they've received. Others, it's operationally in terms of, you know, quality that's not getting addressed until too late in the system and causing problems. And then others, it's just purely risk analysis. And then, of course, there's that bucket that is truly beyond your control. But that's the analysis you'd have to support with FHA. If, you know, how much of what you're originating is truly just driven by job loss in the market and they were good loans and complete compliance with FHA at the time they closed.
Well, we're going to be talking more about that next week, folks, so you definitely want to tune into the program next week. And some of you out there are saying, well, we don't have that as an issue, but you know what? It's nice to point people towards this website and to our program each week as a resource. We'll be right back with Lickin' on Lending after this word.
Mortgage Banking Solutions is the preeminent management consulting firm to the residential mortgage lending industry. No other firm in the U.S. offers the menu of services or the level of expertise to the industry.
Whether you need a new warehouse line, or making the transition from broker to banker, are interested in mergers and acquisitions,
or anything in between, Mortgage Banking Solutions' primary focus is to enable executives to take their business to the next level and guide them down a path towards success and profitability. With over 300 combined years of experience in all facets of mortgage lending, the Mortgage Banking Solutions team of professionals has the expertise and know-how to help you accomplish your goals. New warehouse lines of credit,
broker to banker transitions, transitioning to hedging, financial and accounting services, or meeting your capitalization needs.
If you need help with these or any other aspects of your business, please contact a Mortgage Banking Solutions sales team to see how we can help you at 512-977-9900. That's 512-977-9900. Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level.
Thank you for joining us. This is Dave Lickin with Lickin' on Lending. We're good to have you back. You know what, Alice and Joe, there are 10,000 companies out there that we, and Alice, we brushed over this. We've said it a couple times in the program, but it really is just now starting to sink in. That of 14,000 approved companies out there, 10,000, I mean, approved HUD full legal companies. Again, wipe out the ones that are the mini eagles. That program appears to be going away. They're not going to be working about those. But of the there are 14,000 HUD-approved full legal companies out there. Now, some of these might be banks and part of the banking program. But what's interesting? They're not worried about recapitalization, the capital requirements of a million by the end of this year. But 10,000 of the 14,000 are in jeopardy of losing their HUD approval. Because, not just because of the compare ratio, that's a factor, some are going to be losing that for that reason, but because they are not at the proper level of capitalization. This could be, I don't know that has fully been comprehended by everyone in the industry.
Well, I don't know if people are reacting necessarily at the big number, more so than what we're hearing is company by company, as I'm sure you guys are swamped with, you know, people saying, okay, where am I going to be? I have to now choose a path as a company. Do I have the ability to get the capital and start to segue to that $1 million level? But that's a mile away from hitting the $2.5 million level and, you know, in less than 3 years. Or do I just resign myself to the fact that, well, I'm going to be down at the same level as a broker, and I won't have my own FHA approval, but then it's all about what's the wholesaler going to want from me.
Well, yeah, and then Joe, as we've talked about on the program, there's a number of wholesalers examining the wholesale model, and is that really a viable ongoing model for that? The answer is brokers will survive in some way, shape, or form, but what are the restrictions going to be on them?
Yeah, I expect they will too. They're just too efficient. But you know what strikes me is that there'll be a lot of those mortgage bankers, really strong entrepreneurs that maybe aren't quite at the $1 million, or don't see getting to the $2.5 million levels, that are going to say, you know, I don't want to become part of a big bank, or I don't want to become part of a large net branch operation. I still want some control. So there's good opportunity for great small regional mortgage companies to combine and to
absolutely to, go ahead. I'm sorry to interrupt.
I was just going to say, and combine their net worths, and you know, individually you might not have any more at risk, but you have the opportunity to keep that entrepreneurial spirit.
Yeah, the key to that, Alice, as you well know, is being able to keep the culture of your company in a combined world. It's like, you know what, I can't afford to keep my house, so three of our neighbors are all moving in together. You know what, you may have been great neighbors, but now that you're all living in the same house, it's a little bit of a different dynamic.
Yeah, you're right. And I think, you know, as companies right now, I think somebody on the line said, well, the compare ratio isn't an issue for them. I hope they didn't mean to imply that FHA isn't an issue to them, because if
That's
you're not
right.
doing FHAs, you don't have a problem. I don't know how you're staying in business. And the credit unions are even beginning to really go, wow, this is not going away. We are going to have to get into this space. So
yes.
Competition is going to get more fierce. And those of you know, so without, I think there'll be a big bright line. Do I have my ticket or I don't? Direct
yep.
with FHA, it'll be a big differentiator, I think, in the market.
And I think the most important thing I'm going to tell you, the listener, is you know what? Do not form a conclusion that you're done. I mean, even if you
right.
got a compare ratio, I mean, do not assume that you're done. Just because you know you don't know how you can get yourself to the $1 million net worth level, or end of 2012, the $2.5 million level, you may not know how, but there's folks out there that have the wisdom. That's one of the things we're doing. Alice and Joe, I've never had so many calls come into our consulting firm asking for help and how to, you know, is there really a way I can get the capital in here? Yes, there is. And there is things that you can do that you've never thought of. That's how I've capitalized. I've always used that OPM, other people's money, to capitalize the companies that I've owned and been an ownership of. So I encourage you to not lose hope. I tell you, there's a hope crisis going on out there. And if you're losing hope, get on the phone and talk to one of us. We'll be able to get you pumped up and know that at least get some hope into you. That's not to say that your situation isn't dire, that there's not some serious aspects to it, and there's going to be some consequences and compromises. But I'll tell you that you do not have to go into this new future that we're dealing with, higher capitalization requirements, lower leverage ratios. You do not have to see those as game over for you. What you can see them as an opportunity to capture market share, because many that our competitors here right now most likely are not listening to this program and most likely are not going to be able to make the necessary judgments.
Well, and Dave, wouldn't you say that it takes an outsider like yourself who can look at the numbers from an objective perspective? Sometimes when you're running your own company, you're just so close to it. You've got so much that you know about the people and the players in and the history that sometimes you need an outsider to look and go, hey, you know what? Your margin might actually be better if you don't get the capital, and here's how you can better operate without it. There'll be some companies who might be better off to stay just at the broker level, and then others, like you
yeah.
said, can go out, get the capital, move up to that next level, and really feel like, wow, I wasn't sure I'd be able to do that. And with the right guidance, you can.
Yeah, and I think that's a good point, Alice. Sometimes we get so wrapped up in our own, you know, drama of what's going on. I don't mean to minimize that, nor do I mean that as a negative. It's real drama, and it's really distracting, and it can be very discouraging. But it's so critical that we look beyond ourselves. I've always gone and used a consulting firm, and it's not just a consulting firm. I think, you know, I keep telling people the best consultant you have oftentimes is the spouse that you're living with. They tell us things we don't oftentimes want to hear. And, one of them is like, you're putting on a little weight, honey, and that's not one of the things I love to hear. That's one I'm working on right now. But the reality is there's things they make us look at that are probably pretty obvious, even if they don't have a business background. And then there's those people that are just in the network that are out there. But beyond that, we've got Alice, Joe, ourselves, that can bring you valuable insights and possible things that you haven't considered as you look forward to your future. I'll tell you, get help. Do not just resign yourself. There's nothing we can do. We're done. We're dead. It's over. Not true. Doesn't have to be that way unless you let it be that way, and no action will bring that eventual negative consequence. But we can be in there and help you. So we're not trying to turn this into an ad, but there are a lot of people that are I look at what's going on down in Haiti. I mean, there's so many people walking around in shock that so much happened. And the reality is that, you know what? Yes, but you need to get active involved in digging out the rubble, and it's almost this thing that will help carry you up and out of the the catastrophe that's taking place. So, yeah, we got some things that are negative out there. I don't want to be discouraging. I don't want to be sounding so optimistic that you got my it sounds like I got my head stuck in the sand or somewhere else where we're ignoring the issues. But there are some real exciting things that can be done, and there is a plan. Joe, one of the things you talked about is companies combining up. Yeah, it may feel like everyone's having to move into one house because no one can afford their own house, and there are adjustments, but you can get through that.
Yeah, and I want to point out a very, very significant positive right now is the ability to price in profits in your originations. There are a lot of ways not to make money, and we've all gone through the time where we made lots and lots of loans and didn't make any money. The margins right now are really an opportunity to make more per deal, which is something the industry's needed for a long, long time. And with this ability to, or the expectation that there'll be others getting out of the business, even though we have an expectation for a smaller overall origination volume in 2010, nice margins are a great way to start.
Yeah, I tell you, and for those companies that are adequately capitalized, that are doing well, we have never seen such really attractive bottom line numbers such as we're seeing right now. So there's good reason to fight and stay in the game. Absolutely good things. Joe, I'm looking over our notes. There's a couple of things as I'm looking here, and I'm seeing some emails come in you touched on. The Volcker Rule. We just had an email, and I'm switching direction here. Before we switch direction, let me ask you this. Is there anything else on that topic we need to bring up, that Allison, Joe, before I move on? I want to talk about the Volcker Rule and some of the restrictions and the size and scope on financial institutions and consequences that it might have. So, wrapping up the HUD topic, anything more there that we need to discuss?
Well, in terms of the lender approval side, no, there are just some updates I wanted to give people just as a quick note that we just have the HUD press release. So if you're looking for the information on what policy changes are pending, you have to go to, it's HUD document number 10-016. It's their press release, and it was released January 20th, and it summarizes the FHA policy changes that are pending. So if you heard FHA is going to implement a 580 FICO score and require 10% down for new home buyers, if you've heard seller concessions are going to be restricted to 3%, and some other requirements, those are all pending and will take some time. We'll certainly be tracking them for you on their show, but it's just those are examples of items that are just in a press release for right now. The one that is done is the anti-property flipping. So, Dave, I can finish up with those at the end of the program if you like.
Yeah, let's do that.
Well,
go ahead.
Let's also address the other one that's already in a mortgagee letter is the increase of the FHA down payment.
Yep, I've got those here too. So we can finish up with that too.
Well, let's take a quick break and let's dive back into those. We'll be right back after this word. Stay tuned to more on Lickin' and Lending.
In today's climate, quality counts more than ever, and Wetzel's Trot can help your company maintain the quality that you require to survive in an ever-changing market. With over 450 customers across the country, Wetzel's Trot has specialized in quality control reviews for residential lenders since 1985. Wetzel's Trot can assist your organization in maintaining a high standard of quality within your residential mortgage operation. They offer a wide variety of services, including loan quality control, servicing quality control, quality control plans, fraud review services, and even web-based quality control software. Quality is never an accident. It is always the result of high intention, sincere effort, intelligent direction, and skillful execution. Choosing Wetzel Trot represents the wise choice of many alternatives. Contact Wetzel Trot today for details at 248-592-2252. Wetzel Trot, the single source solution for your quality control needs.
And now, broadcasting live from Austin, Texas, we're back with the Lickin' on Lending Show.
Good to have you back, everybody. By the way, if you wonder who that voice is that's doing these ads, it's the very handsome son of Alice Alvey. He's a very available bachelor. I know I'm going to embarrass him with that one. But he's out there. He does such a great job, and we appreciate him producing this program each and every week. So I was thinking about the fact the election that went on, and Scott Brown made the comments as he was doing his exception. He has two available daughters, and how they just you could just see them going, "Dad, I can't believe you said that on national television." So Andy may be kicking my butt when I see him next after saying that. But anyway, the reality is we do appreciate Andy doing all that he does to make this program sound so professional. He's actually had a career in broadcast. So Andy, thank you for what you do. Always appreciate it, and it makes us sound that much better. Appreciate it. Alice, let's get back into the anti-property flipping rule that's out there. 91 days waiting on that.
Oh, okay. Well, what it is those of you who've done FHAs may recall FHA had a rule. If the seller had owned the property for 90 days or less, you could not go FHA. It was called their anti-property flipping rule. Well, HUD did issue a statement, and it's actually a separate written waiver. It's not out in a mortgagee letter, but it has been published. So effective February 1st, and we believe that's going to be an effective for purchase agreements February 1st. This is a rule that has always been based on the date of the sales agreement, not the date of the case number or loan application. And so effective February 1st, they will be waiving this 91-day rule in a sense. So there are other requirements. So don't just simply go, yay, all right, you know, I can now buy a house, fix it up, and sell it in less than 90 days if I have a good buyer. You don't have to wait the 90 days, but FHA did apply some rules with it. So that's good news. I think it'll help because there are some markets that are able to, you get a good deal on a house, do some improvements, and you are able to get it sold in a short period of time. Now, the rule is all the transactions must be arm's length. And there is still a rule if the sale price of the property is 20% or more above the seller's acquisition cost, then you'll have some additional conditions to meet. So you do need to read up on the full publication. I'm not sure if they're going to come out. I'm assuming they'll come out with a mortgagee letter on this. But it's
that is actually good news. It does bring some clarity and clarifications, and I think this is actually a very intelligent and well-thought-out rule change. So I'm encouraged by this.
Yeah, that's one of the good things. But I think before you were even mentioning, I wanted to throw in one last thing here, that they do say in this announcement that there was $2 billion in neighborhood stabilization program grants given to local communities and nonprofit housing developers. So that was good news, too.
Yes, that is excellent. Let's talk about some of the other thing developments within HUD. There's so much to talk about. We could just make this a HUD program for all practical purposes. Yes, there's a couple other things that have developed, Alice, that we want to talk about.
Well, I think you had mentioned just before break someone was asking about the Volcker Rule and what that
yes,
meant.
Yes,
Paul Volcker was former chairman of the Federal Reserve, so he's been one of President Obama's advisors here in this, you know, economic recovery. So that's where it got its name. Even the president used that name to describe what they're going to propose and trying to accomplish here, that banks will no longer be allowed to own, invest, or sponsor hedge funds, private equity funds, or proprietary trading operations for their own profit unrelated to serving their customers. So, you know, that's one aspect of it. Let's see, I got to try and pull together all the aspects of it. There was one other part of it I'm trying to get my hands on. Joe, you might know.
Well, what I wanted to add was that only a few of the very large banks have these kinds of operations inside the bank. There are others that might have operations outside the bank, but under the bank holding company structure. By prior law, there's very significant restrictions on how much a bank can do with the other entities within the bank holding company structure. So, you know, there are as many questions raised by what the president said in his announcement last week as there are, way more questions raised than there are answers. You know, so far it's just that it's a concept of we want to make the banks, we want to restrict some of their risk-taking activities, and one way to do that is to say we don't want you trading for your own profits. And the other is that there's discussion about restricting the size of a bank so that there's no one bank that's too big to fail. And that's something we've heard a lot about lately. Now, how you go about doing that is something altogether different. I want to also add, Barney Frank has been very outspoken about a lot of things, and he came on Friday in an interview and really put a little bit of calm back into the environment, where he was saying, you know, yeah, a lot of these concepts I agree with wholeheartedly, but we can't do this overnight. We couldn't ask banks to divest themselves of some of their most profitable assets all at the same time, because then their values are significantly deteriorated. So I think what the president said early in the midweek, I think it was on Wednesday, Barney Frank came on Friday and said, you know, some of the things that I think we'd all like to hear as far as helping, one, to calm the markets from the stock markets, because they reacted very negatively upon the president's announcement.
I think it's interesting you say that, because I had an opportunity to meet with some of the folks at Smith Barney of the Private Wealth Management Group, which is part of the Citigroup. And the fact that they are as profitable as they are, have been doing as well as they have, it looks like they would be included in the Volcker Rule, and that Citi would have to divest themselves of some of the things that they're, specifically this operation, possibly. It's not absolutely clear. But they were saying, you know, it was on Friday when we met with them. It was Thursday afternoon. So the Volcker King, or excuse me, it was Barney Frank's comments did calm some of the concerns that there was going to be a knee-jerk overreaction. What I found most interesting, I was in Fort Myers, Florida this last week working with a client that's making the transition from broker to banker. They're raising, they have the capital raise, and they're doing, you know, anticipating what's going on, and we're helping them through that transition. And I was sitting there and listening to the news that Scott Brown had been, you know, made it to the Senate, and the ground, you know, the magnitude of that shakeup within Massachusetts. The first comment I said is, what we're going to see is Obama totally turn to the financial institutions and to this mortgage industry and say he is going to use this as the primary plank in his platform. Looks like healthcare may be, in fact, you know, dead, or at least going through another major, major revision, and that they've gotten the message finally that, you know, the voters are upset about this, and therefore he's trying to focus in on the state on what he's going to do about financial institutions and try to turn the populist vote back towards him, the moderates back towards him. So, you know, Joe, I think it was really good in your comments to say that we can ignore politics right now is ludicrous. You look at what the Scott Brown a nomination or election, you know, how it's transforming things within the Beltway, and that's going to have an impact all the way out. I think these two are just so tightly wrapped around each other right now, it's impossible to separate them. And I think I really appreciate your comments.
Well, that's what happens when you have a government that's so intertwined in an industry like they are in the home, you know, residential real estate market and the financing of that. What they do and say, you know, just like the MBS purchase program, how significant was it that they got in, and how significant will it be when they get out? I mean, it's big when you're that involved in a market that, you know, we'd all like to say can get back to the free market, but you know, without public involvement, but you know, we're a ways away from that. We're gonna everything that affects our markets can hinge on what somebody is thinking.
I think your point. We all want to get three of us, and I think any reasonable mortgage banker out there wants to see the government out of this. Out of the industry. But you know, they own Fannie and Freddie right now, and also Barney Frank was in the markets and making some comments even over the weekend that said,
yeah,
implied that Fannie is toast. What's your make of that?
Well,
I'd
say it's
coming.
Toast. Go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah, we've talked in the past here that you cannot keep the status quo going. Those two entities are in conservatorship, and they have a flawed, if you will, a flawed structure. Whether the government is going to continue to guarantee in the post-Fannie Freddie era, are they going to continue to guarantee mortgages that get put into mortgage-backed securities, will go a long way into what evolved after Fannie and Freddie are gone. It was this summer, I think, the MBA proposed a post-Fannie Freddie era. And so, you know, we're all going to have to deal with that. That's Dave, as you pointed out, maybe the focus turns back to financing and banking, and maybe what we thought might not be on their at the top of their agenda for 2010 is now back on.
Oh, I think it is. I forgot to mention earlier that there is a bill out there still to be named, since you brought up Fannie and Freddie. Someone already trying to propose to limit employee compensation at Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac in the event they move into receivership. So, it was interesting that the planning's on that side. It's, no, let's not zero in on the people that are left or compensation. It seems to be such a big buzzword in all of this control, limit their compensation. Like you said, Joe, we've got to come up with a plan for the new structure. There's lots of opinions out there on how that should be, and we've got to weigh them all out and find out what's really going to work.
Well, I think we got another interesting development, Alice, that you put in your notes for the broadcast today, if we could get to it. I think it's something we need to, we're getting close. We only have 4 minutes to go for the rest for this broadcast today. But the NBA wants to regulate and makes the recommendation, regulate mortgage bankers. Could you get into that a little bit?
Well, it was just something that was published in the National Mortgage News. And, you know, Joe and I were talking a little bit about it in the pre-call, and Joe, you felt that that's kind of been out there for a while. To me, it just seemed like it was phrased differently. But, you know, the Mortgage Bankers Association is a group saying, do lenders need their own regulator, or was it more of a point to say we do need a consolidated regulator to try and cope with 50 states? Joe, well, you had some thoughts.
Yeah, no, I think that's long been the NBA's goal, was to eliminate the patchwork of regulation. Anyone who does business in more than one or two states knows what a pain it is to keep on top of all that. And, you know, quite frankly, a lot of the NBA these days is the biggest institutions that have multi-state operations, and that would seem like a great goal for them to have, is to eliminate this patchwork and to go directly to, or only to, or hopefully preempt state regulation with a common set of regulations.
You know, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I think some of the points that are being made about the president's proposal for this, the new regulation that we were just finished talking about for the big banks, doesn't address lenders. So how do you try and match up that the banks and the lenders are under one regulator and all are following the same rules? I think the president's piece, the Volcker rule and all that, didn't even touch the non-bank side. So, again, a patchwork.
Patchwork. Yeah, well, we're probably going to have to get into more of this next week. We're just about out of time, and so as we do each program, we want to kind of go around the horn and talk about these things, any issues that Alice, that are in your notes that we have not talked about that are really time-sensitive that we should get out. Anything you want to add in here?
I think you mentioned it. The upfront mortgage insurance premiums are going to be changing April 5th, so make sure you're preparing your customer in advance for that, and then watching all the FHA changes to come and getting yourself ready for them. The change is not done.
Joe, got anything? We're just about out of time.
Yeah,
what you got?
Focus your attention on the Federal Open Market Committee meeting announcement on Wednesday at 2:15. Should be of great interest to the mortgage industry.
Everybody, thank you so much for tuning in. Get the word out to everybody else out there that we're here to help you understand and digest all that's going on. And certainly there's a lot. Have a great week. Talk to you soon.
With your host, David Lickin of Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level. On the web at www.mortgagebankingsolutions.com. Today's guests were Joe Farr and Scott Sanderson from MBS Quote Line, delivering live mortgage-backed security prices as trades happen, and Alice Alvey, President CMB of Mortgage U, your ultimate education and information resource. Come by next week, and thank you for listening.